I'm going to ask you the same question later on, so heads up. All right, welcome to episode number 33 of our podcast, Up and Fall, where we talk all about falling. Today with Daniel Baronetto, the foil rat and parawing expert. He came up in my timelines a couple of months ago, and he stayed there very consistently. And I'm super happy, Dan, that you're here with us today. Is there anything you need to add right away?
Well, maybe just an apology for all the spam in your feed.
No, I've been consuming it all the time. And every Friday, no, not every Friday, but almost every Friday, I'm ready for your live Q&A.
Yeah, I've been missing the last few because I've been away overseas. So sorry about that.
That's why. But
there's just so many questions that people kind of ask me, you know, more than once. And I'm like, oh, let's just do something where people can just go back and maybe have a look at a few. And then that might filter a little bit the DMs that come in. But it's fun, man. It's just, I think I learn just as much as people when I'm doing these things, because people come back in the comments and they start adding to whatever I'm saying. So it's pretty cool.
So you started your channels due to parawinging, or did you start it before already?
Nah, so I think like on Instagram, I just started a page on Instagram because I didn't want to post foiling on my personal account and just be foiling every day. So I started the Instagram account a little while back, but I just put everything in there, kite foiling, wing foiling. And then when I started SUP downwinding, I recorded all of my initial sessions from the first time I, you know, tried to balance on the SUP downwind board to actually like the first time that I got up doing a downwind run, but I never posted anything. I just didn't have time to edit and do all that stuff. And it was a shame because I'm like, oh, a lot of people would love to see, you know, the eating crap part of, you know, starting a sport and then actually, you know, kind of resonating with a few of those runs. And I wish I had done more with that. But when parawinging came along, I had that time and I'm like, I'm going to do it now. I'm going to post my first session. And they're really, I don't know who's watching these videos, man, but like they're unedited, like 30-minute videos of me like eating it in the water. But a lot of people kind of said, hey, it's cool to see that, you know, what's happening, how are you going about it, how you're learning. And then that helped them. So that's kind of like why I started. I just wanted to post that journey from really not being able to do it to then doing it. We always see people ripping in these sports and you're like, how did you get there? And I don't know, like maybe they're in a level of the sport where they don't want to post them, you know, not performing at a certain level. So I don't have that. I'm not a pro. I'm not anything. So I'm like, I'm just going to post everything and have an open book out there. And then it kind of grew. It's kind of spiraled. Like people just wanted to have me test their para wings, which was cool. So Flo got in touch. And unfortunately, they weren't able to give me one. I still had to pay for it. But they were happy to put me, you know, in the front of the line a little bit because they were very scarce. And then I started doing some reviews about the parawings and how they performed. And again, very little information about that kind of stuff out there. So
we're gonna get
that's why
into
I started, yeah.
The different parawings. But that's exactly what you said. I think it's hard for people to even start when they just see the pros. So if they see people struggling, they can really think, all right, it might be tough for me as well, but I might get there. So that's super important. Yeah,
for sure. It's just the kind of like the unfiltered. And I was looking the other day at the analytics and people stick around for those videos for a long time. And like, God, that's, well, I hope it helps them. And that's the whole purpose. And I get a lot out of it. We were just talking before the show started. I get so many comments of people saying, try this. Have you seen that? So for me, it's been super good to learn as well as a learning tool. So now I'm kind of being really selfish with it. Like after starting the podcast, I'm like, who do I want to learn from? And now I'm all into, you know, designing a board for parawinging. So I'm going out to all the board designers out there and having these amazing talks with them. And I'm like, yeah, just amazed about just everything that I'm learning with it.
Can you tell more about that?
Yeah, so there's a few shows coming up. 270 Boards came and had a great chat. The guy's a police officer and he has this business on the side, but he's doing really good boards. And then Keith from KT, we're organizing a chat with him, and he's basically working with, you know, Kane DeWild and Kyle Lenny, like the best guys out there. So to have his view on what a good Parawing board is and will look like will be super insightful. But I haven't shot that one yet. So I'm just trying to lock him in, and he's a busy man. So we'll see. It's coming.
And what's a good Parawing board, in your opinion, should have? Because you seem like your Amos 85 is doing well.
Yeah, that is a good board, man. I think it's a little dated in its design now. I think it came out as a light wing board, maybe 1 or 2 years ago now already. And I think having like a 1-to-1 weight volume to weight ratio is a really good kind of intermediate board. I think to start out, just get the biggest board that you have access to, maybe a demo in a kite shop or something like that. But just get out on something big. I think narrow and long is the trend, and that works well for parawinging as well. So I would just try to, if you don't have like a sub surf board or a sub downwinding board in your quiver, maybe just get one and try it out for 3 sessions, because it will make it a little bit easier just being on top of the water. And then as you progress, if you're a winger, you can even use your wing board. I'm seeing some guys now go out on like more squared style boards rather than long and narrow.
Okay.
And they're getting up and they're doing their thing. You know, you don't have to go out and buy something new if you already have something working for you in winging, I guess.
All right. That makes sense. So maybe if you're in that topic, how you should start parawinging, you can help me out a little bit, because I'm a beginner.
Did you get one?
Well, I use Michi's Rohan. Roger, and nice. I still have it here. I hope to use it next week when I'm at Lake Garda. And I used it 2 times, and it's pretty easy to get up on foil. Mm-hmm. Like the redeploying still gets, I have some trouble with that. But I think a learning I had was that you still need to be super right on the wave. You don't need to, or you should not wait until your wave right is over to redeploy it. While you're still easily surfing, so you can just have it tangle or let it sort itself out.
Yeah, but that's still a good tip, actually.
But still, the dangling, it's super difficult. Do you, when you fell in, well, you might still fall in. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I do all the time. Yeah, that's the one thing I do a lot in the parawing is fall in, because I don't care about getting up anymore. Like it allows me to push so much, and getting up is not an issue after a while. So I definitely fall a lot.
All right. So then you take it out of your pouch, and how long does it take to organize it? Do you sit on the board organizing it, or how do you put everything in order?
Yeah. Look, once it's stashed in a belt or a backpack or wherever you're stashing the parawing in, I think the chances of redeploying it properly go significantly down, like by 50%. And that's just because sometimes when you're putting it in, and those belts, they're normally very small. The 3 meter inches is all right, because it's a small parawing. But if you're on a 4 or something like that, you have to kind of just stuff it in, and then things get a little bit out of whack. There's heaps of videos out there. Dimitri, he's a guy that's super active online. Sveni, I don't know his last name, but we'll figure it out and put a link to it. He has a very interesting stashing technique where he grabs all those plastic little loops on the leading edge and collapses them, and then he just rides it with his in his hands. He doesn't do the full stow. But I think in terms of that technique, it takes a little bit of time just to do it calmly. Like at the start, I was trying to put it in my bag, and I was just like rushing things and doing things quickly, because you obviously have to continue to read the swell, right? So it takes a little bit of multitasking, and you don't want to miss the bump and then have to get up again. So nowadays, like once I have it in my hand, I have the bar and the parawing in different hands, I take it very slow. Like I put the bar under my armpit. I start to just take the air out of the Parawing, just make sure that the lines are kind of in order. And I have those first 30 seconds of going downwind where I'm like, all right, I know the energy that's out there. I know the speed. And then you're comfortable riding and then you can start like packing it neatly. So when you do redeploy it off your belt, it's not a mess. In saying that, I only use the belt when I'm going downwind. So if I'm doing like a 10K run or 20K run, whatever, that's when I use the belt. I don't use the belt anymore or a harness hook or anything like that. I don't ride hooked in when I'm just doing a session in a spot, doing like 1K up and then just, you know, small downwind runs. I just feel that, like I said, the chances of redeploying it will go down. So I just rather have a little ball in my hand that I know that once I just, you know, toss it out, it will redeploy properly. But also if you have that little hook in on your waist, sometimes that becomes a tangling hazard. Sometimes your lines get tangled there. And dude, if you have a little peanut in your head, the lines will get tangled on it. It will get tangled on anything that you have. So I just got rid of it. So let's say I go down, I'm in a downwinder and I have to restart. I just take it out of the pouch. And I think the one thing that is helpful for people is to do a little bit of hand handling with the Parawing on land and on top of the board as well. So submerge it. And all you have to do to redeploy is grab the leading edge and you grab like little sections of it. So you go maybe 40 centimeters at a time. And you kind of just get all that water out and you hold it like you're holding a wet blanket right in front of you. And then you'll notice that all of that leading edge is out of the water. A lot of the tangles get undone by then, or if they don't, you will be able to see what lines are on top of each other. And if your Parawing has color coded lines, even better. You can get rid of them.
So much. Yeah.
It helps a lot. Yeah. And I think it's going to be a standard. Like all the brands now have it. And the ones that don't, I'm sure their V2 will have it. So then once you have it in your hand and you're kind of like just letting that water drip, you'll notice any tangles. And I always work the tangles either from the top line, so the A lines down, or the brake lines up. So if you start untangling on the B lines, the middle lines, it kind of still continues to tangle itself. So I always like to work up or down. That helps a little bit. And all of these things, I think coming from kite foiling, you just get back on foil so fast that like when you fall, you're back on foil in 10 seconds. You know, you go back, your body drag to your board and boom, you loop your kite and gone. And things are a little bit slower with the Parawing. So just be mindful and like kind of caught myself a lot of times just rushing things, and it's a good time just to sit down, like have a breather, look at your gear, put it up. I actually like to fly the Parawing for maybe 30 seconds and just give it some tugs so the water drains out and you could see like the splashes of water coming out when you pull it. So that makes it a little bit lighter for you to keep going. And then when you're flying it, you're obviously looking for the last little tangle. Sometimes there's just one line that you have to undo and then off you go.
When you take the Parawing in, do you follow the front lines or the back lines?
Yeah.
Which way you do it?
It varies. Sometimes it falls in your head and you grab whatever you can, you know. Sometimes there's no science to it, but normally I point the bar towards the Parawing and
all right,
I go
so you take the back
lines
all right.
And all the way to the front. And in saying that, one thing that I think not that many people know, but it's important to know like the length of the lines of the bridles on the Parawings, because that makes it easier or harder for you to actually stow it. So the longer the lines, the bigger kind of arm span you have to reach the canopy. And when you pull it in, you definitely want to touch the canopy, especially the leading edge. You want to grab a little bit of that leading edge, because if you don't, sometimes there's still a lot of wind going through the Parawing and it'll want to like redeploy. You'll like, it'll have a, like maybe 20% of it still full and it will want to launch. So then it just messes you up. Right. And then you have to figure that out. So, And again, Dimitri, there's a very active Facebook group, Parawinging Foil or something like that. That's probably one of the only ones that has a lot of people on it now, that has so much information about that stuff. So I recommend everybody who's getting into it to have a look at it. And Dimitri, this guy, he lives in Mauritius, I think, he posted a video of the lengths of the lines of all the parawings that he's been riding. And it's cool to see because I didn't even notice it, but the ones that I felt were easier to stow were the ones with the shorter lines. So that's an interesting thing, but it does kind of limit.
So you shouldn't go over your span. Your span should be the maximum length of the lines then.
Well, yeah, because if the lines are longer, if you're fully extended, you're still just holding the lines. You're not in the touching the canopy, and then you'll probably have to grab the lines and then go that extra foot or whatever. And that makes it really hard. So people that are maybe a little bit shorter or don't have a big arm span, they struggle a little bit with the bigger sizes because the bigger sizes have longer lines. The 4.2, the fives, they normally have longer lines. So that makes it a little bit easier. And it's something that I just recently noticed that helps a lot.
So which parawings have you used so far? I've just used the Roger.
Yeah, I've used the Roger, the 3 meter. I haven't used the bigger sizes that are coming out soon. The BRMs, the Flows, and I think that is it. I'm going to test a few coming up now. So the Ozones just landed in Australia, the Pocket Rockets. So I'm talking to a few shops to try them out. And the Fly Surfer Pow. There's another guy here who's going to get it. So I'm going to try his. And there was one more that's on the way. Oh, yeah. And Nash sent me one of called the Morph. They just launched theirs as well. So that's coming. And the North Ranger, I'm also getting because now with the podcast, I'm interviewing these people and they're like, yeah, try one. So
nice.
Any brand, if you want to give me one, that'd be cool as well. I'm just testing them and sending them back. I'd love to keep a few, so just keep that in mind.
We're going to come to the podcast later on. So from my point of view, what I've seen of your videos, the D-Wing looks, the flow looks like the best one at the moment. What do you think?
Yeah, look, I struggled because I did a lot of comparison videos at the start, and it's super hard when you're comparing one to the other because they excel in different aspects. So I like the flow, the D-Wing flow, because it allows me to go upwind like super well. So nowadays I'm doing very little like long downwinders just because I live in a bay. So our downwinders here, we have little pockets of, you know, a 20K run that they're really high performing. So either there's a sandbank or it's near the shore and there's a little section that the waves pick up. And in a downwind run, you go, you surf it and you keep going. But now with the Parawing, I just park my car there and I just do laps of that high performing area rather than doing the whole downwind run. And I also like, sometimes it's hard to find the shuttles. Everybody knows the struggles of downwinding, and it saves you time as well. So I've been just focusing on doing these shorter laps around the bay and not going into full sends. And what was your question again? I got someone talking here on the outside. I got distracted.
So long ago, my question.
Oh no, you were talking about the performance, like which parawings are good. So for me, the upwind ability of the parawing is really important, right? So the ENSIS, the BRM, they all go upwind, you know, they all go upwind really well. But for you to hold that upwind angle with some parawings, you really have to like dig a rail or just be on that full edge because they don't allow you to release a lot of the energy
deep
in
power,
there.
Yeah.
The deep power is a little bit limited. But in saying that, they are also really good in other areas where the flow is a little bit lacking. Like the flow has a little bit more of a thicker leading edge, which allows it to have the deep power and the stability and all that stuff. But when you're packing it down, there's more material to it. So then it takes another 5-10 seconds to fully get the air out and pack it away. The ENSAs and the BRM, I think, just pack away really easily. So maybe if you're in like in a wave scenario and you need that fast packing, you know, the BRM and the ENSAs might be a good option. If you don't care about that and you want to go upwind, I prefer the flow. But then other aspects like the low end, the BRM feels gruntier in that low end than the flow. So the flow, sometimes your technique has to be a little bit more developed for you to be able to go out on a small parrowing. So for you to have that sensibility of just really picking up speed slowly with the board and picking that up and then being really effective. And it's a gentle pump almost. Like, it's hard to figure it, like to imagine it, but we think that pumping is super hard. The pumping when you're starting to get up on the parrowing is quite gentle. You can't punch through the water because then you just lose all that momentum, right? So it takes a little bit of time to develop that technique. And then if you're starting on the flow, you might just have to start on a bigger size to have that same bottom end. And I know that the North Ranger has a great bottom end as well. But then it doesn't go upwind as well. You know, like, they will all have little sticking points, but they all work.
And it doesn't matter. It feels like winging at the beginning. Winging, when I started, I thought, all right, I'm going to have one board, one foil, one wing, and it's going to be perfect. Mm. And now I have three wings. I don't know how many boards and foils, too many. Yeah. And it's going to be the same with the parrowing, right?
I think so.
All right, I need one, but then you're going to have three. But now with winging, I see it coming back down a bit because the wings get better. So maybe with parrowing over time, they will get better, and maybe you can just manage with one.
Yeah, and look, there's still a lot of R&D to happen. Like, we're on the V1s here, and we're expecting so much out of them, right? And I think it's just worth saying that they all work. And if you get an ENSAs, you'll get up. You know, you're just gonna have to figure out your wind range with it. If you get a flow, you'll get up, and you'll go upwind with all of them. They will all work, but they will outperform each other in different areas.
All right.
And then I think now, I think what Flo did that was really interesting is they have a paragliding background, and they came in to parawinging with a lot of knowledge in paragliding. So they basically did a small paraglider for the parawing.
So did ENSAs.
Yeah. Yeah, but they took different approaches to it. And that's where it's interesting, because the ENSAs, you need to always have a little bit of tension on the brake lines.
Yeah.
And that is something that comes from paragliding as well. Like, people, you know, you ride the brake lines when you're paragliding. And what Flo did, they did this, I think it's called reflex technology, that some paragliders have, that it's uncollapsible. So it's a safety feature, right? And when you go through the approval of products to develop a paraglider, and it's like, it's something for a beginner, it has to have a certain level of safety. And this reflex technology will make sure that the paraglider redeploys if it collapses, right? So they kind of brought that in. And I think now that will become the standard, and ENSAs is coming out with something now. I think the larger sizes will be very different from the three.
Even their three, they're gonna have another V2. They don't call it V2, but it's just gonna be different. Especially,
it's gonna be different.
Power.
Yeah. And I think it's awesome, man. Like, the speed in which these companies are moving now is so cool to see.
Yeah,
it's awesome though. Like I spoke with Baz, and it's so cool to see how ENSAs kind of like changed their whole year of what they were doing with their products. They're like, all right, crap, we have to do a parawing now. Like, it wasn't even in the pipeline, you know, and all of a sudden it's one of the main things that they're pursuing. It's awesome.
Man, listen, next time you're in Europe, make sure to come up to Switzerland, because we don't need shuttles, because like Neuchâtel, where we usually go, we just take the trains, and sometimes we're seven people with big boards and foils and some with the paddle going into the train and going up 2-3 stations, some even more. And
do people understand what you guys are doing?
No, they're in their ties, and they look at us, but it's fine. Make the whole Everything is wet afterwards in the train, but it's really no problem. So you've become really knowledgeable of these wings. That is super cool. Maybe you can just give our listeners, if they haven't seen you, because as I said, you're in my timeline. Maybe you're not that much in others. Maybe you can just tell our listeners how you got to that point, how you started with water sports, where you're usually foiling, and how you end up on that parawing.
Yeah, so my first kind of contact with board sports was wakeboarding. So I come from Brazil, and I live in Australia now for over 16 years, but I'm originally from Brazil and from São Paulo, which is a city that is not on the coast. Like, we have, our closest beach is probably an hour away, but we do have lakes. And I just started wakeboarding after I had to stop like my motorsports career. So during my teenage years, I was just racing and I loved that, but had to stop, too expensive. And I'm like, all right, I need to do something. So I started wakeboarding and got really into it, loved it, did it for a long time. And then I saw kiteboarding for the first time in a video. I think it was like Space Monkeys or something like that, that these guys were doing jumps and board offs. And I'm like, what is that? Like, you, because everybody in wakeboarding wants to do, you know, the biggest air. We do the double ups and you want to jump high. And then I saw these guys having amazing hang time. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to start kite surfing. So did that, learned kite surfing in Brazil, did a few lessons, but never really practiced it until I moved to Australia and lived in a spot here near St. Kilda, which is a beautiful spot for freestyle kite surfing. And it's like near a pier, it's flat, there's little bumps that come in, so little kickers for you to try stuff. And and there's like 40 kites in the water when it's a windy day. So it's beautiful. And I'm like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. So did that for a long time and then met a guy at the beach, and he's a pro kite surfer. He was a pro kite surfer at the time, Ewan Jaspin, and he's now the kite designer for Nash. But at the time he was like just ripping and doing all these unhook tricks. And I'm like, oh, that's exactly what we do in wakeboarding, but he's doing it on the kite, right? So then I got into just doing the whole wake style stuff and loved it. And then one summer he came back and he started living abroad, and he would come back in the summer to visit his family. And he brought a foil one summer, and he was like, we had to wait for maybe like 18 knots of wind for us to get out on, you know, on boots and stuff. So before that, like, it was 14 knots and everybody's on the beach and he's just ripping on this thing, doing all these crazy turns. And when that was around 2013, I think, something like that, 2014. And I really wasn't interested in it. Actually, that was a little bit later than that, because around that time he went into the kite league, park league thing. In Hood River, you know, with the whole park that they do that with the sliders and all that stuff. So it was probably a little bit later than that. I started foiling 5 years ago. So what is that? Maybe 2018 that he came with that. And the first year he came back with that, I'm like, man, that's so grim. Like, we always see the old guys in the bay with their racing gear, you know, and doing 50 miles an hour in the bay. I'm like, oh, I'm never going to do that. And then he came back the next year with more stuff, better stuff. And he's like, all right, give it a go. And I'm like, all right. You know, it was a day that there was no wind. I might as well get in the water. So then he lended me his gear. And after that day, I think I touched the twin tip like twice. It took me ages. It took me a long time. But I just wanted to crack that. And we had a little bit of a run with like low wind. So it was perfect to foil. It was around that 15 knots and people were in their, you know, 50 meter kites. I'm like, I don't want to do that. So I went out on the foil and eventually learned it. Took me a little while to like turn both ways, because with the kite, not like the wing, it's really hard to keep tension on the lines when you're doing your jibes. And because you're so fast and yeah, you overrun the kite all the time. So it took me a little bit of time to get the timing right. And foiling is so frustrating, because you do it once and you're like, oh, I finally learned it. And then you do it another 10 times and you haven't learned it. To get consistent at it takes a long time. So that summer, I just really got into it. And then after that, I think that was 1 year. I did 1 year of kite foiling, and then Ewan came back from, you know, the next year with a wing. And I'm like, what are you doing with that, man? That is ridiculous. And yeah, like, and I was like, that's never going to be a thing. You know, that's not what people want to do. So, and then I bit my tongue again, and then learned how to wing, and did that for that summer. And then the next summer he came back and he was all into prone foiling. So we were all going to the coast and doing that. So I was just basically following his evolution, and whatever he was getting into, I was getting into. And then the only thing I think that he really didn't teach me was sup down winding, that came after that. But by then I was kind of like really obsessed with foiling already. So I kind of knew my way around it, and then got into sup down winding. And then
how did
now,
that go?
Hard.
Because that's a pain. That's such a pain. I'm trying it myself. Is,
especially how it was compared to parawinging.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely harder. Definitely harder. I didn't know how to like do a J stroke. I didn't know how to paddle the board straight. So like my learning in that was from really nothing. And I think it was probably the hardest form or discipline of foiling that I got into. But I'm glad I did, because if parawinging was around back then, I would have just skipped it completely.
Yeah, that's my problem now. Yeah. Mm. Do you still do that now?
Yeah. Look, I do it very little. I like to go out and like use the paddle in the surf and like sub surf. I think that's like in when it's really big and you can't really go prone, you can catch some bombs on a sup, which is really cool. But like for downwinding, maybe 1 out of 10 runs I'm on the paddle now, if that, like very little.
Do you think that it's gonna slowly die, or it's gonna always be a thing?
No, it'll be a thing. I think it'll be a thing. I think there's they're just different disciplines. Like if I'm going on a 40K run, like a Maliko run, you know, 60 kilometers or whatever it is, I think I would rather have a paddle. Because with the parawing, like one thing about the parawing that is much harder than doing it on with a paddle and a sup is that you don't have the paddle to pump paddle, which helps you a lot when you're doing a downwind run and you catch yourself in a spot where there's no energy and you have to dig yourself out of a hole. Man, you can pump paddle for like 500 meters, you know, like and get back to wherever you need to get to. But with the parawing, you really need to be so good at reading the bumps, because there's a point where there's no energy and you don't have a paddle in your hand to produce any energy. So in that regard, I think the parawinging is harder. But to get on foil, man, I think it's so much easier, especially if you have a background in kiting or winging. It'll be a much easier progression and cheaper. Even though these parawings are expensive, let's say they're $1,000, right? To get into sup downwinding, a board is $2,000, you know, like it's a lot of money. You can buy secondhand, but then you need a paddle, and then you need to learn how to paddle. Yeah, good paddle, you know, they cost a lot of money. And then all the learning curve of actually being able to learn the sport. So it took me... I think it took me like 5 to 6 months to be in a confident position in the sup paddling downwind discipline that I was not concerned if I was going to get up, you know, like I was not like, oh, I don't know if it, but it took a while. It took a while. And even if I go out with a small foil on the sup, man, if I fall and I'm tired, it might take me 20 minutes to get up. You know, it's just the reality of it. When it's really windy, it's your balance and like you're 3 kilometers offshore, it's super messy. Just balancing yourself on the board is hard. So all of these things, like, yeah, it's challenging, man. It's a freaking challenging sport, that one. Look, I have a lot of spare time. So I work shift work, right? So I work 4 days. I'm a firefighter, so I work 4 days, but out of those 4 days, I work 2 nights. So essentially, like, I work 4 days on, 4 days off. But on my 4 days off, I'm definitely in the water. And from those 4 days that I'm working, two of them, I still have the days to be in the water. So this summer, we had a cracking summer, man. It was awesome. It was like sea breezes every day, 20 to 25 knots, you know, clean southerly, just blowing the whole day. Like, it was awesome. We had a really good summer. But now we're coming into a really crappy part of the year. April, May is not great. And then when you get into winter in June, July, we get storms. It's the storm season. So it's a different kind of wind. It's not as nice as a sea breeze, but, you know, we'll still get out there and it's still a lot of fun, but it's like 30 to 40 knots craziness.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you don't recommend people like starting with a paddle. I mean, you said you're glad that you started with a paddle, but how would you say it's for a complete beginner who's thinking about getting whether into SUP, whether into parawinging?
Well, I think I would look at their backgrounds and also their gear. Like I said, if you are a winger and you have already like a quiver that is working for you, maybe just go for the parawing, because, you know, half of the learning to get up on the parawing is just learning the balance on the board. And the other half is just learning the pump and learning the actual parawing, right? So you already have that balance because you know how to stand on a board and hold on something with a pendulum, right? And you can kind of bypass that little awkwardness of just trying to balance on the board. And then once you're up, then you still have to learn how to fly the parawing. So, but you will be able to get on foil quicker, I think, than if you try to do the SUP route, because that's a lot of learning. And I think, yeah, look at your background. If you're a winger, great. If you, you know, have background in paddle racing, then go for the SUP, because you're going to be amazing at paddling, right? And then all you need to do is learn the second half of it, which is learning to read the bumps. But then paddling up is not an issue because you're, you know, super strong and you know how to paddle. So those are the two things, like getting on foil and staying on foil, right? Those are the two things for downwinding. So whatever gets you on foil faster, I think that's what you should go for. And
the advantage I see with parawinging is that you can do a lot of work on land, like on a surf skate or even walking on the beach. That you should really do before getting on the water and in the waves. You have to cope with frustration anyway. I mean, the times I cursed into the water.
I had session where I'm screaming out there because it's just not happening for you. No. But I think the skate thing is really good. But the thing is, nobody really does it. And it frustrates me because, you know, people go out and they're like, give me this thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, maybe just spend a minute on the beach and just, you know, toss it around for a little while. They're like, nah, all right. And then they go out and they're like, I don't know. I think it's not for me. I'm like, man, let's learn it. You know, take 5 minutes to learn the thing. And land drills are super important. I do land drills before going out in the water. Every time I get to the beach, I just get the 3 meter, which is my smallest one. And I just fly it on the beach just to like kind of feel how strong the wind is. But when I'm doing that, I'm practicing tacks, you know, I'm doing all this stuff on land because I want it to be muscle memory, because everything happens so fast in the parawing when you're riding. You know, your jives happen fast. If you're trying to do tacks, you know, it's hard to do a long arc. You know, it's a very quick movement. So having those things in the back of your mind already with muscle memory is super helpful. So definitely do drills. When you see people learning how to kite, the first maybe two lessons or whatever, they're all on the beach.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's like 2 days of just, you know, relaunching. How do you launch? How do you do this?
Where are the power zones? Yeah.
Where the power zone is.
I even took the parawing into the mountains and I went down the hill on skis with the parawing. And the going down generated wind. Yeah. There was not enough wind to go up the mountain, like with snow kiting.
That's awesome.
But going down, that was also like, first it pulled in the back, then I realized I have to hold the bar limit to the front, so it accelerates and comes the wind to the front. So that helped, even if it
everything
stupid,
helps.
It's fine, yeah.
100%. How was it on the on the snow? Like, were you in a groomed run or
no? It was off the slopes.
And, nice.
Yeah, as I said, first it pulled me back. Then I had to figure out how to take it to the front. And then once I turned, that it turned afterwards. Mm-hmm. It's just that feeling, the handling that I took it on the luge with my kids.
Yeah.
And when we walked up the hill, they held it, so they were pulled by the wind. And it was just fun. What I thought was really difficult is with the pump foil. Because first, my start, I usually hold the board when getting on the board. Mm-hmm. And then I had the power in my hand, so I stood on the lines. Then I wanted to stand up, and I fell, so I had to adjust my start. And also there, from pumping, being straight on the board, then deploying it, still pumping. And then once it pulls, you don't have the board, you don't have that much weight. So you really have to be super precise, and it's really not that simple.
So you get on the board, you stand on the board before you deploy it?
No. Well, with the pump foil, obviously, yes. Mm. But no, usually I have it fly when I'm still in the water, or I sit on the board and I deploy it.
Like then just I saddle.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And paddle back with the legs so I don't run over the lines.
Yeah, that it's all of those things. Like, I think when people are expecting a lot from their first sessions, and maybe because they see people doing really well, and some people get it quick. You know, if you have a kiting background, if you have a winging background, you will learn faster than someone who doesn't have that. Like, I've put these parawings in the hands of wingers, prone foilers, kiters, everyone. And when you see a kiter hold that parawing, immediately they already change their hands on the bar without you saying where they have to hold it, because they feel the response. I'm like, oh, this feels good now. And it's just an instinct that they have to compensate the movement with the bar movement, right? And I see wingers holding it. It's like, it's not turning. I'm like, yeah, you're just pointing it in the wrong direction. Like, and it takes a little bit of time.
Yeah,
it takes some time.
Need the perfect wind as well.
Perfect wind. The conditions make such a difference. Such a difference. And especially with the parawing, I think two or three knots, plus or minus, you're on the wrong wind range. They have a very small operating window still, right? To the point where nowadays, if I'm going out and I know that it's going to be a bit variable, I always have a second parawing in the pouch. So I just take a second parawing with me. So I have like a 4 and I have a 3 in the pouch. And sometimes I'm riding and I just go close to shore and I toss the 4, and someone in the shore catches it. You pump around and you deploy the 3 and you keep going. You can use the gear to your advantage, but man, it's a small operating window.
And the first time I used the 3 meter, it was with like 25 to 35 knots and huge bumps. And it worked, but it was so exhausting.
It would be. Did you have a harness?
No.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to try next, especially to go upwind. Mm. I think if you go upwind with the ENSYS, and the V1 doesn't have a good deep power, it can help to hook in and distribute that force. But let's talk about foils. Which foils do you use? Which foils do you ride?
Yeah, so I ride Code. And Code, they have two different lines of foils. So they have the S series, which is like more of it's a high aspect, but it's not super high aspect. It's like a 9.5, 9.6, depending on the size. They have the R series, which is downwinding, 13 aspect ratio kind of thing. I don't like the R's that much. I really like foils that turn well and surf well. And I feel like when I use the R series, I ride at like 80% because they're so spanny and I can feel every little bit of turbulence in the water. And if you're going like on a big day, if you're doing close to 30 Ks, I feel it's so sketchy. I don't feel confident. So I prefer the S series. So all my foils are S series. So what do I have? I have an 1130. That's my biggest one. The 980, the 850, and the 720, those four. And with those four, I can basically go out and ride pretty much any condition, be it in the bay or out in the coast and doing like open ocean runs as well. And those are the ones that I mainly use. So I think the 980 is what I use mostly in the bay. I love that foil. I use it with an extra small fuse, so it turns really well. And I recently got into these smaller fuses. I used to be on a medium, then tested a small and an extra small. And I felt that I was going to have a lot of pitch sensitivity with the change, and they didn't change that at all. Like it was really like I was, because I changed that. I used to ride Armstrong, and I used to play around with the fuses. And when I went from a 60 to a 50, I was like, I don't know. I still prefer the medium, which was the 60. They had a large, which was 70 centimeters. And with the code stuff, I think they have a very different build, you know, from compared to the Armstrong. They're a bit thicker and a bit bulkier. And I feel that I had no pitch sensitivity change. And now all I ride is the extra small and the small. And then tails, I have those. I do have the high aspect tails. So the R series, the 120 and the 135. Those are the ones that I use for downwinding. And then the AR series, which is more of a surfy one. I have two. I have the 142 and the 150. And if I'm parawinging, like I said, in a little spot, catching waves and not doing downwind runs, I'll be on those tails. And if I'm doing any sort of long distance, I'll be on the 120 or the 135.
But for a beginner, would you suggest a longer fuse?
Yeah, like the longer fuse will give you the stability, you know. And I think like parawinging, it's not a beginner sport. I don't think anybody's going to get into foiling and learn parawinging straight away. It's not going to be your first discipline. I think, you know, the easiest way for people to foil, I think, is winging. Just, it's very user-friendly. Like when you put people up behind a kite, the kite, like they scare people, man. People think they're going to die when they touch a kite, you know, and they're super safe now, but they're very wary of, you know, the kite pulling them.
They can generate a lot of power.
Yeah, they are scary, man. They're scary things. And the one time you get pulled over the rails because you're trying to get up and you land on your face, you just hold back a little bit.
And 20 then, times.
Yeah, your kite movement just a little bit more docile in the 12 to 11 o'clock range. But I think winging is the best way to get into it. You'll learn how to manage your mast height, like all those things that you need to learn when you're foiling, and learn how to turn, all that stuff, and then get into parawinging. And when you're starting, obviously, you're going to be on big front wings, big fuses, and big tails and all that stuff, and small mast.
And now you use an 85 board. Did you start with a bigger one?
Yeah. So I just use my downwinding board, which is an 8.2 by 19 by 115 liters. So that's what I use in the ocean. I used to have a smaller board for the bay, like a 7.7. Was it the first Armstrong downwind board, the 7.7, 121 liters, I think it was. I can't remember how thick it, how wide it was. But I sold that to get a more of a open ocean downwind board, and I never kind of replaced that 7.0 range. So I just have the 8.2, and then I jump straight into the 5.10 85 liter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Do you have any more foil or gear related question? Because I want to talk about podcasting.
I had a question when it comes to stowing. Do you think that in the future companies are going to come up with a system, like a type of harness, to attach the bar outside of the pouch so that you don't have to tangle it, so to make it easier to untangle it and launch it?
Yeah, and there's some crowdsourcing stuff happening already. A guy called Michael Shepard in that parawinging group, he developed a little clip. So he's 3D printing these little clips that you could put on your belt. And when you depower and you stow, you can just clip the bar to the belt. So, and that helps with a few things. One, you don't have to have it under your armpit and you can just move a little bit freer. You just clip it there. But sometimes when you're stowing the parawing, because you don't grab it properly or whatever, it starts to loop in your hand And obviously that creates a lot of knots, right? And once you redeploy it, it's just going to be a mess. So once you have it on that belt clip, the bar and the lines, they don't tangle anymore when you stow it in a belt. The lines remain intact. So that's pretty cool. He's actually sending me two of them to test because I don't ride with a belt that much. So I don't know how much I'm going to use it. But for people that ride with a vest or something like that, having that little clip is super helpful. And I think a lot of the brands are coming out with that already. I think Ozone's belt, if I'm not mistaken, comes with those clips. And if it's not Ozone, it's another brand that just launched theirs. I can't remember, but I remember seeing a couple of clip bars that you can have on the belt now. And that will be helpful for people just to like not have to think about holding the bar or having those extra twists on the lines. And Matt, just to answer something that we were talking about before, when you redeploy, a lot of what people are doing when they're redeploying is they're throwing the Parawing where they want the Parawing to go. And it can work like that. But I feel like if you just hold the bar and you just drop it and you ride downwind for a little while, if there's a tangle or if there's a twist, it'll start untwisting itself and then it'll slowly start to inflate and it'll just go. So to your point, like when you're redeploying, have a little bit of juice in the wave or whatever you're riding to still keep going for another 5-10 seconds. And instead of like trying to guess, you know, the side that the Parawing is going to open up to, because sometimes the leading edge is pointing one way, but there's a twist. So it still has to untwist itself before it can go.
Yeah.
Just drop it beside you and just hold the bar and you'll notice that it wants to fly properly. So it'll start untangling or untwisting, not untangling, and then it'll fly out.
All right.
Is something that is super helpful.
Good. Cool. Matthias Hefele from the Foil Life podcast. I have, he 3D prints things as well. Also clips, also these camera holders for the back of your wing when wing foiling. And so I've ordered one of those as well.
Yeah, those can really help. I was almost thinking about having something on the bar that could put a camera in, but I'm just thinking with another thing that the lines will get tangled in.
Yeah.
But also like when I think about like how to stow it better, like what Ensis did with those middle lines, going through the bar, that is kind of like, if you don't know how to do it and it's in overpowered situations, if it's like 30 knots, 35 knots, and you're on a 3, it's going to pull you even if you're going downwind, it'll be hard for you to depower it properly. So sometimes it's just worth like ejecting, you know, hold on that thing, grab the lines and just put it away and go downwinding. If you have to redeploy and go upwind and do small runs, that's not going to work. But if you're just getting up to go on a downwind run and you're overpowered, just get rid of it. And then if you fall, you'll be able to take your time anyway.
Yeah,
exactly. So take a break.
Let's talk about your podcast. You're on episode what now? 8, 9-ish?
No, not yet. I filmed them. I haven't launched them yet. I think next one that's going out will be number 7.
7.
Mm.
How do you come up with that? What was your idea? Where did you get your inspiration? How do you choose your guests? I mean, your first guests were bangers.
Yeah.
How easy is it to get in touch with them?
It was so easy, man. I literally just like dropped a DM on Instagram and they were all very generous with their time. Like, I think I took a lot of inspiration from the Progression podcast. So when I was learning how to downwind, you know, Eric's podcast was like my Bible. I got late into it. So I think he had like so many episodes already up and I just went like through the whole list and watched them one by one. And, till this day, I'm pretty up to date with his stuff. But he was a big inspiration for me because he spoke about the flow states and all that stuff that I love to talk about. But he interviewed designers, he interviewed athletes. He started working with Unifoil through the podcast as well. And you know, that gave me the inspiration to just understand what it opens up and what happens when you're just talking to these amazing people. So the first few, Cynthia, Josh Koo, and Baz, I just reached out to them on Instagram and said, hey, look, I'm starting a podcast on this. Do you want to get on board? And Josh Koo, he doesn't even parrowing. I'm like, mate, do you want to come on and talk about like you starting to parrowing? And he's keen, man. He's just super generous with his time. So, and Cynthia, I just followed her on Instagram and she's been around for so long, man. She's seen so much. She's like, she is one of the OGs, like 100%. She's like her crew that she rides with now in Maui, like Sam Reynolds, you know, Greg Drexler, those guys are just producing, the Pocket Wing guy, the BRM guy, like she's, you know, that's the people that she's exposed to. An amazing athlete, like she was parawinging before parawinging was a thing, just attaching a parachute to her vest while she was still paddling to get a little bit of a boost. So like that's kind of like, that's amazing, right? And I think it's also good to just have representation of all disciplines, everyone, right? Like just talking about parawinging, I think it's nice to have a niche, but I want to bring people from winging to talk about it, like Baz, right? Like what he's doing with the parawing is insane.
Yeah.
And like, I'm sure he's doing stuff that he, like, we don't even see, but I'm sure like handle passes, they're doing all that stuff already, right?
Have you seen the video where he was going, or was that Michi going with two parawings at once?
Yeah. No, it's awesome, man. And like his creativity is just off the charts, man. Yeah. Like when I see it, like if you're just doing a doc start session with him, you'll see things that you've never seen before because he just has that creative energy. And it was awesome to speak with him. So yeah, like literally the people that I reached out to, they, I think like 90% said yes, you know, and the other 10, I think didn't even read the message because they don't go on Instagram.
Yeah.
They were really receptive.
Are your podcast scripted? Do you have like topics you want to address, or you just go with whatever comes up?
Yeah, I have topics. So the way I do it is I'll just have topics like safety, technique. Depending on the person's background, I'll touch on certain things. Like with Cynthia, I just wanted to know more about the beginning of the sport because she was exposed to that, right? With Baz, I just wanted to double click on jumping and like doing the amazing things that he does. So I just have some topics, maybe like, I don't know, anywhere from 5 to 10 words that I have just beside the computer. And I want to like make sure that I touch on them, but the conversation goes, man, when you get people that like to talk about foiling, they don't shut up. Yeah. So yeah. And then obviously you pick up on stuff during the interview that you want to just learn about it yourself. So yeah, it's kind of scripted, but not to the degree that there's a lot of questions that I read out.
So you have a few episodes that you have recorded but not edited yet. Can you maybe give us a few names who's going to be
next?
Yeah,
so my mate, Ewan Jaspin, he's going to drop next week. So Nash came out with the Morph. So that's launching or has launched already. And like you can go out and get a Morph. I like that name, Morph. So he's coming next week. And like I said, KT is the big one that I want to get on the podcast. Keith, I just want to learn everything about boards with him. 270 boards we shot and it's coming out. Who else we have? We have Dom from Ozone, so the designer of the Ozone Pocket Rocket. We're gonna record. There's a few good ones in there. I'm not gonna say all of them because I don't want
to. That's fine.
Spoil,
sure.
But
no,
I think. Follow. Yeah, I think like all the big brands that I'm speaking with, they are all happy to either point me in the direction of someone they can talk to, either a team rider or a designer or like a sales representative or something that could give some good information.
All right. Sweet. Thank you very much. When I look at my list of words, I'm almost through. Do you have anything you want to ask Dan?
No, just maybe a question that could be useful for our listeners because due to our backgrounds, we are mainly into palm foiling. So maybe like most of our listeners are into palm foiling, and we talked about whether it was better to get into SUP like Paddle Up or parawinging. So for someone who only has a dog start background, for example, from Switzerland, would you think that like what's best?
That's a tough one. People that have very small boards, very they big foils. Control.
Yeah, they have full control. They know how to pump, but maybe they don't know how to paddle and they don't know how to wing.
Mm.
Don't take Switzerland for an example, because we often we don't have wind. So the paddle would be better probably.
Yeah, look, if you have wind, I think that's a great point. Like it's in parawinging in 50 knots is grim. Even if you have a big 5 meter parawing, it's not great, because if you're like, you can get up, and getting up is not the problem. I think if you have like a medium to big size board and a big foil, you'll get up. The problem is when you jibe and you go downwind, you kind of match the speed of the wind when you're going downwind. And if it's, let's say 12, 15 knots, and you're going at maybe like, let's say you're going slow, you're going at 5 knots. That wind goes down to like 10 or 8 knots and you have nothing. And a parawing doesn't fly, and it doesn't, like, you'll try to turn it and it's not going to turn. So having wind is one, but thinking about a dock starter, they will have to get a new board regardless, right? Because their boards won't work. They have a big foil. Great. They could use that. I think I'd still choose the parawing. I choose the parawing because once you get through the awkwardness of just being balanced on the board holding the parawing and learning just how to maintain it flying, I think it's a little bit easier for you just to think about pumping, holding the parawing with one hand, and the movement of pumping and feeling like that subtlety of getting the foil engaged. I think whoever pumps dock starts, they have a very tactile feel of the pump. They know when they're going to punch through because they're too slow. They know that feeling. So I think I would still start with the parawing, because once you do it, it's just going to open up so much more. You can have sessions. You can just go downwinding. You can catch waves. Obviously, you can do that with the paddle as well, but you're going to be on a smaller board, you're going to be on a smaller foil, and I think those things kind of make a big difference to the experience you have. Like when I go out and I'm on the 8-2 board, it's still a lot of fun, but I'm not ripping as hard as I can on a 5-10. You know, when I got up for the first time on that 5-10 85 liter board, I was laughing because I was like, this is what I thought it would always like feel like to be on something that's still bigger than a prone board. But I had dreams of being able to do a prone downwinder, but I don't have that level of, you know, technique. Yet. And I think, yeah, well, like, I don't know, man, it's such like, so few people can actually do a prone downwinder, because if you fall, you're completely screwed. And you know, it takes a lot of time to reach that level of chipping in and then pumping out into the ocean. But the parawing allows you to do that. You're essentially with a very small board, and you can have that feeling of something that is very restricted to very few people, you know? So I think ultimately the benefit of the parawing will give you, you know, a very good reward for your time.
All right. Thank you very much. I think we can pretty much wrap it up. Dan, is there anything you want to tell our listeners? Maybe what's next with you? Where and how they can follow your story?
I don't know if there's anything I want to say. I think just foiling just taught me how to keep an open mind. Like we were talking about how we got into it. And, you know, I started, you know, shitting on kite foiling, bit my tongue, started shitting on wind foiling, bit my
Same
tongue.
Here.
So when people see parawinging now, I think a lot of people are still like, nah, just fighting it. And I would just go out, try it. You know, if foiling taught me anything, it's just to keep an open mind. And then, I don't know, in terms of what's up, I think I'm really excited about Hood River this year. I've never been and I'm finally going to Hood River in July. So it's been 2 years that I've been like dreaming about going to Hood River, but couldn't go because of different things that were happening. So that's going to be my July trip. So keen for that. So if anybody's going to Hood River in July, let's definitely hook up, because it's going to be mental out there with all the parawings, I think, in the market.
Nice. It looks amazing there. All right. Then thank you much, Dan, for coming on the show. All that's left for me is to tell you who's the next guest going to be. And you said it's going to be winter in Australia. It's going to get cold, and it's perfect. Actually, segue into our next episode. It's going to be with Jan Dalibo. He's the CEO, founder of Soros, the wetsuit company that makes organic wetsuits, getting away of that petrol oil based wetsuits, sick, which is super interesting. Yeah, because I still use that very thick old wetsuit, super not flexible. So I'm eager to learn about those. And all the listeners, the viewers, thank you very much for listening, for watching. If you want to see older episodes on uponfoil.com, you find everything you need to know.